The briefing today unplugs people's creativity by embracing the wonder of change. It seeks inspiration from maverick innovators and change makers to share their stories, experiences, and dreams. Designers are the creators of new products, services, applications, and so on. Simply put, designers are the creators of the things we interact in our daily life. Each new addition to the system means that known and unknown consequences will follow. Today, I'm joined by John Russo to explore the underlying steps of responsible design and the beauty of system in flux. John is partner at Artifact and leads team in strategic foresight and speculative design. Thank you, John, to be here with me today, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
We currently live in a situation where individual responsibility is key to the health of the society at large. How would you distill the definition of responsible design?
Yeah, sure. For us, we're thinking about responsible design in terms of a set of fairly big ideas that pertain to how innovation should happen. So there's responsibility, say, at the societal level, in terms of just kind of doing the right thing, broadly put. But then in terms of design specifically, we think that there are at least five kind of key ideas. It begins with being inclusive of multiple stakeholders. Traditionally, design was primarily concerned with the user, and I would say that is still largely concerned with the user. But when you focus just on the user, you miss a lot of other stakeholders in the system. So you miss people who are impacted by the things that you make. You miss the broader societal impacts, and you miss the planetary impacts. So the first aspect of responsibility is really just being stakeholder-centric. And then beyond that, it's thinking about all of the ways in which stakeholders are impacted over time. So thinking about things in terms of complex systems and root causes, thinking in terms of how we might use design to shape preferable futures, and of course, as I said, being cognizant of the impacts of what we make, both now and in that long-term future.
Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing from you is that we need to put an extra layer in when we design, that it's not just designing for, you know, few months, few years from now, but put a futuristic layers. And that's when the responsibility comes, understanding what the consequences could be. But also, let me ask you this. Is the design, you know, the being and doing responsible design, is the designer that must be responsible on what he or she is designing? Or responsible design is designing something that give responsibility and make the users responsible of their own actions?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, traditionally, designers haven't, I think, had a lot of responsibility or taken it, because they're mostly working on behalf of others who have commissioned them to do something. And so the designer is merely a cog in a chain of production between, you know, an organization or a corporation who wants to accomplish something and an end user of that thing. And so what needs to shift, I suppose, is both designers feeling like they actually do have some responsibility for the outcomes that they're creating, but also recognizing that responsibility exists in an ecosystem of others. So it exists in partnership with those that are commissioning or otherwise, you know, responsible for funding the work or benefiting from the work, as well as those on the other end who are kind of consuming and using it. So if we took something like social media as a product, right, we could say, well, nobody's forcing people to use social media, so it's a user problem. And we could say, well, a lot of aspects of social media are designed to be addictive on purpose, and that's a designer problem. And then we could say, well, the business model of social media is corrupt because it's based on monetizing attention. That's a business model problem. And all of these things are really just different layers of the same problem, which is to say that the design itself can't be responsible unless all of those kind of components in the system are kind of thought about in a responsible way.
And that is an important topic that you're touching upon, which is the power of social media. And in the last few years, we saw and we experienced how social media changed from the early and embryonic concept, which was to connect people, to engage with friends that were not in your same city anymore. And now we saw social media that are an engine for changing and perhaps influencing elections. And we just leave it there. I really like when you're saying that all these experts should be seen and designed under a lens which is a responsible lens. So all those experts should be thought with that lens. And if we look into human-centered design, that has a limitation within itself, which is the human. It gives centricity to the human when now we need to look things from a complex systemic perspective. What your opinion on moving the focus on just a human centricity, which is quite static, and enlarge this to a system perspective? And we can call it system-centered design or ecological bio-centric design.
Yeah, I really like that framing. And I think that we're probably a long way away from it, in large part because of the fact that designers still exist in this kind of intermediary space between, you know, corporation or entity and user, and thus are still largely cogs in a system that is designed to produce a product or an experience or a service or whatever. But I do think that in the future, moving to a more ecosystem kind of view of how design functions will be required, I think that that will by necessity mean that we have to reinvent kind of the processes of design, the concerns of design, the business models of design. Like, a lot has to change in order to work that way and think that way. So we would need to think of design as more or less a continuous activity that is continuously adapting to an external environment. So that means that we have to get better at looking forward in terms of how we anticipate the external environment changing. It means that we need to get better at anticipating unintended consequences, recognizing them when they exist, and then adapting or pivoting. And in general, just adopting a more adaptive, you know, set of behaviors in general. Today, the way that we work isn't designed to accomplish that at all. And so my sense is that there needs to be a more large scale, perhaps even a more profound change of what it means to be a designer or how design practice functions. I think if there's reason to be optimistic about that, it's in part due to the fact that design has become essentially an internal competency within many organizations. And so I think in the old model where design was simply external, right, where the corporation hired someone to design a thing, that by just the nature of the relationship created a condition where the design was done at some point and simply handed off and then shipped. And I think that that mindset still exists, even though design is now integral to many businesses, governments, et cetera. But what can change and what needs to change is this sense of kind of doneness, right? Design needs to be something that is engaged continuously in a pattern of prototyping, measuring, evaluating, redoing, visioning, et cetera, right? It needs to be a more holistic and iterative process than it is today.
Yeah, and what you're saying is that design should be really integrated with the C level of the organization. You know, strategy should go end to end with the design. In that way, design can be adaptable, or at least the product, the solution, the product, the offering of that organization can be adapted to the changes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, there's been a trend in design toward these kind of C-level roles, chief design officers and the like. And I think that that's a positive trend, except to the extent that those roles only reinforce existing power structures and hierarchies. In other words, if design remains kind of the execution part of the enterprise, then design will continue to have the same sets of problems that we've been talking about. So my sense is that kind of the conception of design, in addition to the representation of it, needs to change. And those two things probably happen in concert, like one can't happen without the other. But design is and needs to become a more shared activity across enterprises and organizations, because that's the only way it could kind of live in this way that we're talking about, that it could evolve into a more agile, ecosystem-centric, forward-looking set of activities.
Yeah, and then from your experience, how would that be possible? How can we democratize, if we can say that, how can we democratize design across the organization, across people, and not just, for executing something, but it's, to me, it's more a way of thinking, a way of observing and come up with ideas and connecting things, because we're talking about the system, not just human-centric, but, we mentioned new system-centric or ecological-centric design, and that means also complexity. There are so many interconnectedness within that system that it's not even easy to think about, and even map out.
Yeah, I have a hunch that even when we use terms like design, we're not talking about the same thing. That we use a big, broad term like that, and it means something different to a lot of different people, in the same way that the word strategy means very different things depending on who you're talking to. And so in the organization, I don't know if it's necessarily true to say that design shouldn't be about execution or design shouldn't be about craft. Because we still need to execute things and make things aesthetically beautiful and make things functional, all of the traditional kind of concerns of design. What I think needs to happen, rather than simply saying design needs to be democratized, would be to say perhaps there needs to be a new discipline that exists in parallel. And it's still design, but it is perhaps more hybrid, because it needs to borrow from economics and strategy. It needs to have a lens on the business model as well as the customer. It needs to have a lens on the future. It's a different set of competencies than I think are readily represented by kind of most organizational structures today. And frankly, that are perhaps within the grasp of most designers. Most designers don't care about those things. And so my sense is that design itself needs to kind of divide up a bit and or broaden its set of concerns, and that perhaps some new kind of adjacent discipline needs to emerge.
How should we call that?
I think that there are a lot of people working on it right now, or at least a few. There's a program at Carnegie Mellon University called Transition Design, which is about large scale systemic change. There is what we are working on at Artifact called responsible design, and lots of different people have adopted that vernacular. I don't know that any of these are sufficient. My sense is that there needs to emerge some set of hybrid practitioners that are, again, the sorts of people who want to engage complexity, think long term. It's probably a combination of strategic foresight, business strategy, and human-centered design, or at least design thinking on some level.
So at Artifact, you are doing responsible design. So there are designers that take this broader systemic vision to design and implement solution to drive changes and innovation. As you correctly said, design speaks to people in a different way. Strategy speaks to people in a different way. And meaning are different. So what are the tips and tricks that you can share about encouraging companies to take up responsible designers to develop solution and to look for the challenges within their industry?
Sure. I think that the most important thing is to recognize that it is accessible. And so I think if I were listening to what I even just said about there needs to be a new kind of hybrid discipline that exists on a completely different sort of mental model, that seems very intimidating and almost like, well, I can't be a designer if I'm doing that. I have to become something else. My sense is that responsible design exists on a continuum. And so even if you're a designer who is primarily working on execution, say designing products for market, there are all kinds of ways you can bring a responsible perspective to what it is you do. It may be just by shifting your mindset a bit and thinking about, well, beyond the user, who are the other stakeholders in the system? Have I thought about them? Have I thought about the impacts of the product that I'm creating? Do I have any agency over those impacts in terms of what I'm doing? And so my sense is that this movement toward responsibility will have to happen both in a top-down and a bottom-up way. So in the top-down way, it's senior people recognizing the need to make things in this way and changing entire processes and organizations in line with those goals. For individual designers who may not have that same degree of agency, there's still a lot that one can do. And I think the trick is to find the small ways to move toward responsibility and to actually seek it out as opposed to waiting for permission to bring it into your work. And I see that happening all over the place.
Yeah, it's always better to ask sorry than for permission.
that's a rule to live by in design.
That's a good rule to live by. Something else that you do at Artifact is strategic foresight, and which has a massive uptake with the COVID situation, where uncertainties were just increasing exponentially for everyone, individually to organization scale. How do you implement that via design practice? How do you merge? Where is the linking point between design and strategic foresight in Artifact? And how do you offer these to companies?
Yeah, that's right. You know, strategic foresight is obviously, and in future studies, has been around for quite some time. I mean, humans have always thought about the future, and I think that the kind of professionalization of strategic foresight has been, you know, around for at least 50 or 70 years. Today, I would say that in terms of its integration with design, we began to move toward it largely because we were looking for ways to be more responsible and to think farther ahead, because it was clear that there were a number of things happening, particularly in technology, where we hadn't done a good job anticipating kind of future consequences, that the mental model was, well, we'll just build it and see what happens and things more or less will work out. And it became clear to us that that was a failed way to think about how the world works. Strategic foresight, which of course already existed, provides a pretty ready kit of tools that allow us to think creatively about the future, to create, you know, I think more useful images of the future, and to use those images in concert with design practice to interrogate what it is that we should make and perhaps what it is that we shouldn't. So by integrating foresight practices, whether it's, you know, scenario building or visioning into design practice, we're in a position where I think we can become better designers because we adopt a broader view of what is possible, as well as a broader view of what should happen, right? We can better integrate our values into the futures that we are creating in ways that I don't think are as readily accessible if we don't think long-term.
Absolutely. And I believe too, it's very important to have this forward-looking perspective surrounding the design that we do today, to build solutions that are more sustainable, resilient, and do what we discussed before, do responsible design. However, outside there are design agencies that does design, and there are foresight agencies that does foresight. How do you go about telling their stories? Because you come in the market merging the two. So sometimes it's hard for company. It's there for everyone actually to envision what the future could look like, could feel like,
yeah.
You know, sound like. We should put ourselves in the shoes of someone living in 2030, 2050. But we agree that it's very hard to do that, especially when we're talking about something very far in the futures. So how do you go about telling that story to the clients? What's your narrative when you are, you know, showing the power and the benefit of merging the two?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, in terms of product design and innovation, the idea of designing for the future has been around for quite a while. You know, I can think back over the last decade or so of design consulting, and one of the major project types that recurs quite often is the future of blank. So the future of work, the future of mobility, what have you. And in the traditional design firm, what you would do would be to kind of think ahead in terms of what was technologically possible, and you would try to envision future needs, and you would essentially create speculative artifacts or representations of future products that were intended to inspire innovation internally. They were intended to be kind of North Star products or services or concept cars, if you will, for the future. And a lot of this, while it was fun and really kind of, you know, interesting to do, was not always particularly rigorous in terms of developing that sense of like, well, what are the tensions involved in this future? Who are the stakeholders? What's happening more broadly? And so over time, what we've been trying to do is to essentially add rigor to that process. And increasingly, as our clients have become more sophisticated in terms of recognizing the existence and the value of foresight, we start to get requests to do these future of projects in slightly different ways. So to, you know, either take a broader lens or to explicitly create scenarios or to otherwise integrate aspects of longer term futures thinking in a more rigorous way with the kind of innovation charter that we're also often tasked with. And that's what's a little bit different about doing this at a design firm versus in a, say, a foresight consultancy, is that our job doesn't really end with, say, the image of the future. Our job ends when we have kind of a strategy and a set of ideas that are meant to kind of live within that future. And my sense is that that's where that kind of segment of work is going, that it's our ability to, I think the secret superpower of design, if you will, is the ability to make something tangible and to kind of realize it in a way that isn't just description. And if I were to point to one weakness in the traditional foresight process, it might be that it relies on narrative and words, which are great, but not always sufficient. I might point to speculative design practice and say, well, a lot of that is merely critical and isn't necessarily directed toward creating a better future. And I would say that what's happening in our little world right now is trying to take the best of all of those worlds and put them together in a way that creates new kinds of value. So to say, well, how do we think more creatively about the future in a structured way, right? So that there's some rigor behind it. How do we blend that with innovation programs in such a way that we can think quite creatively and orthogonally about what is possible and what we might make? And how do we turn that into something tangible that hopefully is more useful to the organization because it's grounded in kind of this, I think, broader set of ideas than perhaps what we would have done in the past.
This is fascinating, and I like your proposition of merging the two, where future thinking can give that vision, you know, can be that divergent part from the present to the futures. what might happen. And then we have the design aspect, the methodology within design that can actually give tangible aspect, you know, can give a shape to that possible futures. And from there, yes, we can build a narrative, but we don't just stop to the narrative. We take action on those words that can share meaning, and we give a physical confirmation to those to actually build and design something on top of that. And these can only be enriched by a multidisciplinary team that work and bring different type of knowledge, different expertise, so then better and more complicated from a positive perspective futures can be built, and then we can develop ideas on top of that. As advice, we arrive to describe two utopian or two dystopian futures, and actually the company is left with empty handed because they don't know where to take those utopian and dystopian futures. They are too futuristic, actually, if we want to use that terms.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's worth noting that, like, the way that we think about barriers between disciplines or boundaries today is largely the result of modernity, right? We, like, the reason we have like a separate discipline called foresight and a separate discipline called design and a bunch of sub-disciplines within that is largely the result of the Industrial Revolution and the effect of the economy on kind of dividing up labor and human knowledge into discrete categories. And it's worth noting that it hasn't always been that way. And many of the biggest breakthroughs in human history have actually come about as a result of hybridity, people who are combining different streams of knowledge together in novel ways. And I think that we shouldn't be afraid of that. So we shouldn't be afraid as designers, for example, about being amateur futurists. And I would say the same thing of futurists, like that's, there's nothing to be afraid of in terms of being an amateur designer. It's really kind of looking more broadly at kind of what is possible and really choosing the methods or assembling the right collaborators that are going to provide a novel result. And my sense is that there's no reason to continue doing things the way we've always done them just because that's the way we've always done them.
Exactly. And what you're saying is actually closing the loop of our conversation that we started from, you know, being and doing responsible design and the need to adapt to the changing circumstances, you know, and this system in constant flux. So we need to adapt to that. But we need to adapt in a proactive way and not just being there passively waiting for something to happen to adapt. So by being amateurs of other disciplines, that just give us more knowledge and we become a more solid T-shape. Within our conversation, there are so many nuances and points that we could actually talk for many, many hours and go deeper and deeper in any of those. I do like and believe that merging disciplines and building stronger multidisciplinary team, we can actually do a better job to designing more resilient, responsible, and sustainable solution. So thank you so much, John. And just one last question. What is the last book that you read or you are currently reading?
Let's see. I've got a bunch of books. I just started one called The Myth of Capitalism, which looks good. It's obviously a critique of capitalism, but does seem to offer some set of guidelines as to what kind of a post-capitalist economy might be like. I think that that's one of the major issues of our time is essentially designing the economy in a way that works for more people. But without assuming that the answers are already in front of us. So that's the current book.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you so much, John, to be here with me today. And thank you for sharing your expertise and your opinion, your dreams, and what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
The Briefing today unplugs people's creativity by embracing the wonder of change. It seeks inspiration from maverick innovators and change makers to share their stories, experiences, and dreams.